Hang in there. It is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to The Smiley Show, and as you can see if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, I'm of course here at home in Durham. I'm Charlie Hume, he is Smiley Kaufman, he is in a hotel room in Montreal, which means that Smiley is boots on the ground for the President's Cup this week. Travel was, let's just start there. How was travel today? If you had the chance to sit down and get a little poutine, I'm a little jealous. I do love the city of Montreal, so I want to know a little bit about the flavor thus far of your visit there.
Yeah, it's I really haven't seen downtown. I saw the mount thing, you know, next to
the
downtown.
Mount thing. The mount thing's great. Yeah, yeah. Gotta see the mount thing.
Kind of saw it flying in. Yeah, I just went straight to the hotel, threw on the clothes, went to the golf course, spent probably 3 hours just doing prep on the course, and yeah, came back, and now we're here just recording the pod. So
that we are. Also, how about, do I get any sort of comment on my cool headgear that I've got here?
Let's go.
We have a couple segments presented by Ahead in this show. We're super appreciative to have them on as a presenting sponsor this week. I will say this. I think I've said this a few times on the show. If you are a business looking to digitally transform your offerings, your product, Ahead's great for that. If you love great golf merch, Ahead shop. Killer. Like, I got the Bad Birdie polo rocking. I've got the little branded Bills hat rocking. And I said numerous times on the show, like, my goal in this, you have your partnerships, your course, former tour pro, you know, winner on tour, very elite sort of things. I want to have like a NASCAR jacket on the show where we've got a head, where we've got the recovery pin, where we've got, you know, wear SPF, T-Mobile, like Culver's, IHOP, like you name it. I just want to have a jacket on. That's where I want to arrive in golf media, if we can make that happen.
I want to see it. Yeah, I think we have definitely a social team that could potentially make at least the Photoshop to where we can at least see that, what that might actually look like.
I want it all. I want to have it all. But we're very appreciative to Ahead this week. And as just noted there, we are very appreciative to our friends with the recovery pin presented by SkinFlow here, that we talked a little bit about this on the Monday show and, you know, the benefits that it brings. We're admittedly not a science pod. There's, you know, some sort of trigger point release happening. There's some magnetic fields, but here's this, I want to get this part of it, right? Because we talked about using it on the golf course and playing, kind of warming up and getting ready. You use the recovery pin, I'm sure, getting off a flight up to Montreal from Birmingham, Alabama.
Got it right here, bro.
Did it help? Did it help you today?
No, I haven't used it, but I was on the golf course. My knee was killing me. And I was thinking to myself, can't wait to get home. I'm going to foam roll and then going to use the recovery pin on my knee. And actually, I can just do it while I'm looking at you and talking and doing a podcast, which is the beauty of it. It's not loud. It's easy to travel with. And I currently found the trigger point on my knee and going to hold it for 45 seconds. And hopefully, voila, snap the fingers. We're good to go. I could feel it instantly, though, just within 10 seconds of having it on.
It is amazing. It is, you know, again, a trigger point pressure. I'm just reading words right now that I don't quite understand, but magnetic field therapy, negative ions. There's a ton of cool stuff packed into that pin. And as Smiley noted, you kind of press it on 30 to 45 seconds. It releases that spot for you. If you do that consistently throughout the day, should help your golf game, should help your travel, whatever you're doing in your life, this pin can help you out.
I'm going to do it like every 10 minutes during the pod. So if you can just sound a buzzer for my knee, because that was a session. That's my first little session on the knee. I'm hoping to get a little lift in the morning and trying to get my legs right, because I just think my quads are tight and I need a foam roll. And then I think having this therapy here with me, because I don't have all my bells and whistles of my assortment of rehab things that I typically travel with. Very nice to be able to just throw this in here with all my podcast studio stuff.
How about this little nugget for you? We're going to take a little bit of a tangent here on the exercise and recovery front, because we're vaguely on this topic. Went for a run with the dogs for the first time today. Just you know I've been heavy on the Culvers the past month. I kind of need to shed some pounds. Unfortunately, our little pit bull Nora girl also could stand to shed a few pounds. So I was looking at the dogs today. My lab was looking a little sad. He hadn't been outside in a while. You know, said, you know what, Maxwell and Nora, we're gonna try out this running thing. Went out. It was great. I immediately ordered some harnesses and some of those bungee leashes, and I'm gonna get into running with the dogs. How about that?
Say I can't run because my knee. Call it an excuse. Call it whatever you want. I just have patella tendonitis, and it just hurts too much. Like the more I run, so I'm a Peloton bike guy.
I will be exactly where you are in probably a month. Out $200 on leashes and harnesses, but it's a novel thing to try in the meantime. And to bring this all back to where we started, once I'm done with that run, I can use the recovery pin to get me right. So big thanks to them. Go to therecoverypin.com to check it out if you'd like to, you know, join Smiley and I on this sort of this journey to wellness. It's a good place to start.
And all the international team players this week have it as well. I didn't see one player out there today. I think they all must have played mid-morning, so I had the whole golf course to myself. But if I did see a player, I was going to ask him about it, see if any of the guys are using it. I'm sure they are, because it's a little chilly out here. I will say the temperature isn't quite 90 degrees, which I left Birmingham as the high today. So the weather in Montreal going to be a little on the cooler side. We're supposed to get some rain tomorrow and Thursday. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday are going to be gems of a day.
It's kind of cool to look forward to fall golf in a way, both of us living in southern states. And we can look at a calendar and it says September, but we can step outside and we still feel the humidity and the heat. And it's like, can we just get to the part of the year where the leaves change a little bit and it's a little cooler outside and you can enjoy your rounds? That's obviously going to be the case in Montreal this week. So it's going to be fun to see that on the TV. You kind of teed us up a little bit there on just players vibe on site. We're going to get into, you know, more in-depth stuff, the course itself, some stats, things like that. But so you didn't see a ton of guys from the international team on site today. Did you catch up with anyone on the U.S. team or, you know, captains, assistant captains at all?
Nobody. I literally didn't see anybody. All I did was my course prep. But I've been I watched live from yesterday. I also saw
Johnson. He's back.
So I saw Johnson out there today. I didn't see what hole. Apparently, he had another chili chunk and a thin over the green. Have you seen it?
Back to back. And
was it on hole 12? Because that's where he was set up. That he was going to try some shots.
You know, I don't know what hole it was because I was just kind of scrolling through Twitter or X or whatever, and I saw the video and stopped on it and just pulled it up and flipped the audio on halfway through. And Randall Shambly and Paul McGinley are just in tears, just crying, laughing. Just the chunk immediately followed by the blade. Just amazing stuff from Johnson.
Gosh. He was telling me that he got in the lake where he hit the shot yesterday.
Yes.
And he said because of the way the wind was blowing that it was bringing all of the gunk in the lake to that little section in which he was hitting that shot out of the water from. And so he got in there. He says it was freezing and that, you know, it was real fluffy in there. But when he hit the shot, when he got out, there was a line, he said, that was like halfway up on his shin bone of just – a gunk mark of on his pants. He said it just was some nasty stuff in that pond there at the 14th, but it was epic. I mean, it's so funny watching live somebody screw up chipping or whatever it is. I think it's one of the best things in golf right now is when Johnson gets a wedge in his hands, because I guarantee right now, if I got in the same spot, I mean, especially with bent, like softer fairways, whew, man, I wouldn't want to be hitting anything with spin on it. Like, I don't want to put it back and just do anything but try to get one up in the air. I just don't think I'm quite ready to hit flop shots and spinners on a one-take basis.
Right. Well, it's very like on command. It's got to feel a little bit different, even though both of you all have played PGA Tour events in front of thousands of spectators on site and even more on television. It's a very different thing where
it's like foursomes.
Yeah.
And like and how you're out of rhythm. And that's something that these guys are going to be dealing with this week.
Without a doubt, like talking people through the shot. And listen, as you're about to see on our YouTube channel very soon, I'm not qualified to talk about anyone's chipping ever because there has been a lot of ball meets hosel action happening there. So,
dude, you're a good pitcher, but like you're also a terrible pitcher. It's the weirdest thing ever.
It's just, you know, it's golf. It's the way golf goes. It's just, you got to just laugh at it and move on. And that, Johnson does a great job of that. So that's why he's so well equipped for that role. It's hilarious.
It's so good, man. So well, good.
So where shall we begin? Because we've got, should we get right into the core stuff? Just really kind of dig into Royal Montreal.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. Just fresh off of, you know, doing all my prep on the golf course, my expectations of the golf course.
Well, can I stop you there real quick?
Of course.
for the sake of clerical items, because this segment is presented, as noted off the top of the show, by Ahead, our partner for the week. Thrilled to be presented by them. Thrilled they sent me all this cool stuff that I get to wear all the time now. Ahead is a strategic partner for enterprise clients, helping them navigate the path towards digital transformation. Much like an expert caddy, reading the course ahead and providing the winning combination of equipment and execution. You can check out www.ahead.com to learn how Ahead can accelerate your impact. But right now, Ahead is here to help us produce today's show. And the name of the segment is Think, Plan, Move. With end-to-end accountability and their comprehensive blend of strategic consulting and transformation services, Ahead takes a bias toward action, helping their clients achieve more with less. So, Smiley, we know less about the venue this week, Royal Montreal Golf Club, in comparison to other venues we've seen more regularly. Now, this is the second time Royal Montreal has hosted the President's Cup, also hosted in 2007, hosted a Canadian Open in 2014. But for me and for many of the players this week that are out there on the international and American sides, unfamiliar to them as well. So let's hear it. Give us you've walked the course now, you've done your course prep. Give us a little bit of intel so we know what to expect out there.
I get really giddy when it comes to learning new golf courses. When I get on property, I just get excited. I just love, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what the play is, you know, how the holes are going to play. What are the easy holes? What are the hard holes? You know, where are the misses? So that's a part of professional golf that I loved. You know, when we went to new golf courses, I got excited because I think some people, they like to show up to golf courses they know how to play, like they don't have to do any work on them. Personally, me, like I loved just spending the time I did this afternoon grinding on this golf course. And it, you know, I think just a couple just overarching thoughts about the course in general is that it's you know, it's a Parkland type golf course. It kind of runs together. It's not overly, you know, dramatic, I would say. Everything's right in front of you. There's no tricks about it. And I think there's certain similarities I picked up from Royal Montreal of other golf courses that it kind of reminds me of. There's certain tee shots, like on the back nine, there's this pond that kind of is around this whole back. You kind of go up and back, and it seems to always be on the left side of the fairway. And it's not just like over there to the left. No, it is the left rough. So, you know, you're standing on a fairly, you know, straight hole, maybe has slight dog legs in it. And that water is just on the left. And, you know, when I think about golf courses that reminds me of that I've played, Bay Hill comes to mind. Of some shots that I stand there on that tee and you're presented with so many different options of what club to hit. You know, you could hit driver, you can hit three wood, you can hit iron, like you can hit whatever you want off these tee boxes to get one in play. And typically on most of the holes, you know, the first off, if you, you know, get it as close as you want to that penalty area on that left side, most of the time you have a better angle, you're closer to the hole. You know, if you bail out to the right, typically you'd have you know, an extra 20, 30 yards playing out of the rough, and you're playing towards, you know, the little gap that pretty much is in front of every single green. So there is risk and reward in that fashion. I wouldn't call this golf course a risk reward course, because I think, you know, when we talk about match play golf courses, and you've heard this from not only just, you know, people on TV or probably people that you've played with at your home course that say, you know what, this is a really good match play golf course. And I always laugh at that and say, well, technically every golf course is a good match play golf course. What makes a really good match play golf course? I've always kind of thought about it in that way. And I think of like legit risk reward where, you know, you're presented with options of what to do. It's like no strategy is like you can go for it or you're going to play out, you know, at a tip completely different angle. This isn't that golf course. To me, it's straight in front of you. There's very few holes that really dogleg. Everything just goes, you know, slight doglegs one way or another. Call it what you want. I didn't call it like just overly dramatic. So that's like the first thing that you need to picture. When it comes to Royal Montreal.
Can I ask you there, do you think that suits the Americans or the international team better? Like, do you think a more dramatic risk reward setting would help the international team?
Well, it's a good question. And I think the way this golf course is structured, as far as, you know, how many par fives, how many par fours, how many par threes, there's four par threes, I believe. I'm just remembering going through them. There's two long par threes and the two short par threes. But for the most part, there's just two par fives on the rest of the golf course and a lot of par fours that aren't, they didn't seem like they would be wedges. You know, I haven't looked at all the numbers to see what these guys are going to be hitting, but it seemed like if you hit drivers off the tee, it feels like you're going to be left with that 140 to 170 seems to be kind of the area in which you're going to be left with a lot of shots. A lot of wedge, 9, 8 irons is kind of what it felt like across the entire golf course. Didn't really feel as if there's too many long irons on this golf course besides the par threes. It felt like a lot of 9s, 8 irons, maybe 7 iron here and there into a par four. And, you know, a couple wedges into some par threes and par fours. And then, you know, you're hitting probably driver, five wood into the two par five. So how that sets up in my eye is it made me start to think about how these teams were assembled and the captain's picks. And I started getting into the minds of the captains and the vice captains and how they, you know, pick these guys for this golf course. And so I started going through the international side and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I see some advantages of having a guy like Minwoo Lee out here. And, you know, just going through some stats with Minwoo Lee earlier that I just was blown away by, his driver off the tee stats, he's 6th this year. So that's something that was a little surprising to me. He's 315 yards off the tee at 5th, ball speed at 187, club head seat at 124. And I see that as a tremendous advantage in spots on this golf course where there's certain bunkers at 320 that I think a lot of guys aren't even thinking about covering. Like the 18th hole, for example, is one that, if you recall, Tiger Woods tried to hit it over that water against Mike Weir, hits it in the water. This year, I would say that depending on the wind direction, you know, if there's some help, I think a majority of the guys are going to be able to carry it. But if there's any hurt, I think there's only one or two guys that are going to be able to carry that left side, and Minwoo would be one guy. So
can I also ask you there, because I was listening on Live From earlier with Johnson out there talking about the course conditions, and you made the Bay Hill comparison earlier, and I believe it was Brando that posed the question to Johnson of, if we're calling Bay Hill rough a 10, where are we with Royal Montreal? And Johnson's answer was, we're probably at an 8 right now. But said there are certain places where you know, like a bunker where there is a carry that's in that 300, 320 range or whatever. They've kind of mowed the backside of the bunker. So it's an advantage of maybe a guy like Minwoo Lee, where you, if you can carry that bunker, it's not going to get caught up in the rough on the backside. It's going to kick and run to the fairway. Is that, you know, does that kind of align with what you saw out on the course today? And just, you know, were there, I guess, were there any setup advantages you felt like suited the international
team?
Yeah,
that was a kind of what I was going to get into from a setup standpoint. You know, I it seems like that they've made some renovations since the last time they played this. From what I understand, I need to do a little bit more recon. I've heard that they have. And based on the positioning of all the bunkers, that would make sense, because the bunkers in which they and where they sit, there's not a lot that are like 295 carry. They seem to have a lot that are 315 carry. And then you have another set of bunkers on the other side of the fairway that are, you know, 280 carry. So you have, you know, this one bunker that if you smash it, you can carry it. But for the most part, if you hit it at it, you're going in it. And that's what it felt like on this course, is that in that 290 to 320 area, that all the fairways seem to narrow up from, I'd say, 25 yard fairways to like, or 30 to you know, something inside of 20 yards. They get just really tightened up, mainly because those bunkers where they sit kind of cut into the fairways. So that was one of the big takeaways for me, was driving the golf ball. It's going to be, I wouldn't call it challenging, because it's not necessarily intimidating. All outside of a couple tee shots, I think it's 14, 16, and 18 with all the same shot. It's like water left, but you can miss right. It's not like there's OB on this golf course, which kind of leads me to my next point of the United States team and the captain's picks from that side. 100% understand why Max Homa and Brian Harman were picked this week. You know, I had question marks about why, you know, why these two guys, because Max is in his form. You know, his best finish in his last seven starts is T33. You know, he's the highest of any of the guys in the official world golf ranking. Like, there was a way in which you said, you know, a guy that's not driving you good, like, do you really want to take him? But this golf course, you could send it around. You could find the golf ball as long as you don't hit it left. It seemed like to me that's the only miss you can't have. And if Max is playing from the fairway, or if you, you know, put him on, let's say the, I believe it's the odd holes, which is would be all the par three holes. And so you have a guy that's ironing it good and he's a great putter and you know the dog that he is. It's like, okay, that makes sense. And then I think Brian Harman, like if you had to like tell me a couple players to pick of just like how this course plays and like certain guys that would be a good course match for, Brian Harman would be a guy, Corey Connors would be a guy, Colin Morikawa. These are just players that are going to put the ball in the fairway, can kind of hit different shots, eliminate one side of the golf course, give themselves eight irons and you know, rely on their putter. Maybe not Corey Connors. He's not a great putter, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, and let me give you some just course stats for anyone who you know, you noted a little bit that there are only two par fives on the course. That's because Royal Montreal is a par 35, 35, 70. The sort of unofficial yardage is just shy of 7,300 yards. You were talking about that renovation that happened in 2004 and 2005. 17 greens were redesigned. 70 of the 71 bunkers were rebuilt, to your point. Added some different tee boxes. The surfaces, the greens, colors, approaches, tees, and fairways are all bent grass with some Poe mixed in, and the rough is that Kentucky bluegrass that we've already discussed a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't mention the rough. Rough, I didn't really get answer your question. It's patchy in areas, like in the fairway. I didn't see it to be some crazy long rough. So if Bay Hill's a 10 or whatever. Whatever 10 is the, you know, where you drop it, you can't find it,
right?
Type of video you see on Twitter. I would say that this rough is medium. I thought it was going to be a lot worse, to be honest. Around the greens, though, that's a different story.
It's thicker there.
Which, well, to me was surprising.
It's interesting to me, and I wonder if this has something to do with it. And you said it's supposed to rain tomorrow, which is kind of tough because apparently there was 10 inches of rain in August with a flooding event that closed the course for a few days. And as a result of that, they've had difficulty mowing the rough. So I wonder if that it has something to do with the way the setup is and if you know, rain tomorrow is going to make it tough to set it up, you know, in a more difficult way, or maybe let the rough grow more and get it to a more difficult level. I'm not sure which way you think that's going
to
go.
Well, it's hard for me to really say because I did throw golf balls in the rough and I wasn't necessarily intimidated by the lies because first off, this golf course gives you run-up areas on just about every single hole. There's very few holes that have elevated greens and forced carries. So when we talk about what makes rough challenging, there's two ways to do it, or golf courses in general. What makes it play more difficult? And it's firm greens, elevated greens, and then if you don't allow balls to run up short of the green. And so this golf course, to me, the rough is not crazy thick in the fairway, or like, you know, it's spotty, you'll catch your eyes, but you're given an opportunity to run everything up so you can play everything to the front of the green. I didn't think the greenside bunkers are that deep. There's a couple that you have to avoid on this golf course, but even to the fairway bunkers, I'm challenging them because I didn't find the fairway bunkers to be that deep as well. When we think about golf courses like Muirfield Village, you know, like their fairway bunkers are deep, big lips. This golf course, to me, the sand looked fairly thin, looked much more on the non-fluffy side, which everyone seems to like when we talk about from a player's standpoint. More playability, more spin around the greens, but also nice for you know, short middle irons playing out of you know, a lot of par fours on this golf course. So I think this it's going to lead, I believe, to, you know, I understand why Mackenzie Hughes was picked because I think you're going to have to make some putts. And that was something that surprised me a little bit about this course is that I didn't expect it to be quite a putting contest because I thought there was going to be some challenges tee to green, which there are. Don't get me wrong. You still got to hit it really well. You got to be really accurate off the tee. And if you get wayward, you're going to be playing for a lot of pars, especially if they tuck the pins. But if you have a guy that's in a foursomes pairing that's getting on the green and you can give Mackenzie Hughes putts, I get that.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Just we've seen it with various tour setups. I think infamously a few years back at the Amex where, you know, John Rahm came off the green and was, you know, saying this is a bleep, bleep, bleep putting contest where there are setups that don't have all the protections that you need that are pretty straightforward. Kind of to your point, Scottie Scheffler in his comments today was talking about it's basically an execution, you know, test. It's like it's all right there in front of you. There's not a ton of, you know, what line do you take? It's just kind of right there. So if that is indeed the case, you know, to the advantages of guys like, you know, Minwoo Lee with that length, you know, maybe getting a shorter club in his hand. You noted, you know, guy like, you know, Max Homer, Brian Harman, understanding why they're taking because they're not going to get penalized a ton for missing off the tee unless they go left. But the last piece of that is what you already kind of noted there is like, does the international team makeup start to make sense? Mackenzie Hughes, Christian Bezuidenhout, others, if this turns into a putting contest? And I guess you've already kind of answered that question.
Well, the other thing to note too about the golf course is the green structures. They're, you know, not the biggest greens in the world, but you know, they're not the smallest either. There's definitely some room, you know, playing out of the rough that would make them play smaller. But there's so many subtle slopes on these greens. And there's actually on, I would say, three or four holes, very steep slopes. It's very unusual. I've never seen a golf course like this where I've had to just stare at the green to really understand what the slopes were doing. Because there's a lot of greens that have ridges kind of dissect through them. So these subtle slopes that kind of run diagonally across the green, and there's like two sections of them. So basically all this to say is that there's, you know, three different sections of the green, but they all kind of funnel towards the same direction. I'll kind of show you a picture of one of the ones I'm talking about, but it's just bizarre, you know, that some of these, you know, like you could get into the wrong section and you could have a putt that as it get crest over the hill, these balls are breaking, you know, gosh, I mean, they're just snapping across the world. So I felt like there were about six holes where you can make putts from distance, but then there's a lot of holes, like six other holes that have severe slopes on them. Typically the holes that are having, you know, I would say more of the 100 to 130 yard wedge shots. These are the greens that had more undulation, more like subtle slopes to kind of deal with.
That sounds like a putting contest to me. I mean, if it really is, I mean, I guess there's an execution piece of that, you know, even Scotty's noting, where if you hit your iron shot, your approach shot to the correct section of the green, knowing where you can miss or can't miss, then you should have a relatively straightforward putt. But if you're in the wrong spot, you better hope you got a good putter on that squad. Yeah, I can see this now. If you're watching on YouTube. Now?
Yes, yeah. So like, this is my notes from the 15th hole today. And you can kind of see I drew just some little subtle lines there. They kind of dissect up and across the green, mm-hmm. where you can see those arrows are all kind of pointing to, I believe, the left side of the green. So everything's moving to the left side. You have these like subtle slopes that are like pushing it one way, and then on the other side it goes the other. And I feel like it makes it kind of tricky to figure out exactly what number to play, because if you play 6 to 7 yards short and it can easily hit into a slope and stay on that wrong section, or if you decide, hey, I want to land it, you know, closer to the pin, and let's say you just land on the downslope of one of those and then it shoots past the hole, now it could sneaky get over the little crest of a deal and now you have a putt that way. So I think there's some shots out there I felt like you might really have to figure out how firm the greens are, mm-hmm. to see which type of shots to play, because it's really easy to, you know, if it's soft, right, if we have some rain, these guys are just going to throw darts at them. But if it firms up over the weekend, it's not supposed to rain past Thursday, then you might see a little bit more of that.
This is sort of an abstract question, but just curious in the context of all we're discussing, and I always get it mixed up. Isn't it correct that this is the one of the team competitions that the host team does not control setup? Where Ryder Cup host team can do some stuff with setup. For this one, I think the tour is in control of setup or something like that.
I think there is a little bit of say. I think there is, like, within the PGA Tour probably setup guidelines, right? They're not going to let them just put hay on the sides of the fairway, right? Like, they want it to be
Where's he could dial in some pin placements if he wanted to kind of keep the internationals in and around it. Okay, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, I'm going to I can kind of walk you through there's a stretch of the golf course I think is super interesting. And it starts on the 14th hole. And this is like the beginning of the Woody Austin, Johnson Wagner shot. So like, this is the 14th hole. And it's a 400 yard par four. And you can kind of see here how like dead straight this hole is.
And is this the hole they can make drivable? Is that correct? Like, there's one where they can push it up to as short as 300.
They can make this hole drivable. Okay. But like, when you look at it from this perspective up here on the top, mm-hmm. of this yardage book, so the water's on the left side, but the fairway slopes a little bit to the right.
Mm.
So today, for instance, the wind was, I believe it was out of the southeast, which was a left or right wind off of this tee, which is a nightmare for SK. I don't know what I would have done there, because it fits a perfect Corey Connors little draw. But that's what I was seeing on a lot of these holes. You have, whether it's a, you know, trouble on the left and the fairway kind of wants to slightly move the other way, or a dogleg that goes right to left and the fairway it moves to the right. Similar with, you know, a hole that goes a little, you know, a dogleg right, the fairway kind of wants to move the other way. And that's kind of the theme.
A little uncomfortable bit there, like just slightly. Yeah,
that's like the challenge off of the tee, is that visually on these slight dog legs, is that you're presented with bunkers that you're not sure if you can carry. You don't feel like you can. So do I want to squeeze it up there and just pound it? And if I hit it in this, you know, 18 yard gap, I'm rewarded with a shorter club, or I lay back and hit a 3-wood or a long iron and left with, instead of that 9-8 iron wedge that I was talking about, now you're hitting a 7-6 iron potentially on some holes. So that's where, you know, these guys are going to decide in, let's say, a 4-ball situation on some of these holes, like 14. I already showed you the green at 15. 16 is very similar, like tee shot, where are they going to decide, hey, let me hit a 270-yard shot. Let me get it in the fairway. And after that, and if I hit the fairway, why don't you send driver?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The problem is, in that scenario, is I've been the second guy before and I didn't want to hit. Like, I feel better with a driver in my hand. And let's say Charlie, you get up there and you're going to hit 270 down in the fairway. You quack hook it in the water. And that's when now I'm like, okay.
A lot of pressure there now. Yeah, like, yeah. I still like to hit this, but, you know.
And then I'd be hitting one in the hospitality tent to the right, and then we're just going to go play that because I'm not quack hooking it.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I think the other thing, too, just from a course, you know, sort of setup and how it applies to this particular format, you know, versus like a regular PGA Tour stroke play event that was also discussed on Live From today, was just that this course seems to make it pretty clear how to pair guys together, or at least how to kind of set up a, if we're paired together, I'm teeing off on these holes, you're teeing off on these other holes. And I say that because you noted this earlier, all the par threes are on odd holes. So it's easy to kind of get a guy that is a great iron player, you know, for example, a Scottie Scheffler, have him hit the first drive on the first hole, and then know that he's going to hit an iron into all four of those par threes. Is it, Was there anything else there in terms of what you saw today that was like, yes, this is, it's making very clear to me the type of partnerships or pairings I'd put together based on what I'm seeing from this course?
Well, that's a good question. And I think the obvious answer is you know, outside of the normal partnerships that we do see, I think we kind of touched on it a lot on Monday, and I kind of stand by a lot of what we did say. Nothing has really changed my mind. I think you could easily, you know, put your best iron players on the odd holes. It seems like you'd want the guys that are the better iron players playing the odd holes in that, in the foursome setting. So, other than that, man, I think this golf course is going to really have a bit of pucker factor on the back nine, which I think is going to make for some interesting wild shots. I think it's going to make for turnarounds and matches, which is, I think, makes it interesting for a viewer. Front nine is going to be a bit sleepy from a viewer's perspective, but once you get to the back nine, it's going to have a really cool look to it. And remember that, who cares about the golf course? Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, Augusta National. Get these guys playing against each other. It doesn't matter. They're going to show emotion. The crowds are going to be great. And you could play this thing, you know, on a Muni golf course, that it still would elicit the same reactions from these players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a huge part of the host venue is the people that are going to show up and create the experience. And we've seen the past couple of years at the Canadian Open just how in love with golf these fans are. And so I think that's going to be a really, really cool part of this week, is just how they're going to show up and influence the proceedings. And I think that That nicely sort of segues us into the next section of the show, Smiley, once again presented by our friends at Ahead. So let me kind of tee you up here. This is what I got. So Ahead builds and manages digital platforms that power the most successful organizations in the world. Their consultative approach, unmatched engineering, and innovative solutions combine to accelerate the impact of technology in every client they serve. Ahead takes a cross-domain approach to solving complex problems, integrating solutions across the technology stack and bridging the old with the new, relying on their heritage of modernizing legacy infrastructure to blend with cloud native skills, all of which you can learn more about by going to www.ahead.com. So what Ahead does, Smiley, there is they kind of stitch it all together. All right. Here's what I want you to help us stitch together right now. There's been a lot of talk in the media this week. There's been some controversial, some touchy moments with journalists and Jim Furyk. Mike Weir and sat up there today and answered some questions at the podium on this topic. It would be much more compelling for the President's Cup if the international team won one of these things, you know, not, they've already won once, they've tied once, but every other iteration of this competition, the Americans have won. So it would inject a little bit of juice back into it if the international team were to pull off a home win here at Royal Montreal. So my question for you is, just to kind of stitch together for me, what needs to happen for the international team to win this thing?
Okay. Are you Judge Holm here?
Yeah, I'm.
Are you Judge Smales?
I could be Judge Smales. I could be Judge Holm. I could be Judge Hume. I could be any of the above. I could be Judge Judy. You name it.
Well, Your Honor, this is going to be a tough sell. But bear with me.
You've got your little lawyer pen. I'll get my gavel out. We'll wrap the gavel.
As I do have a couple of things I'd like to get to here in this bit. First off, this President's Cup is not in the United States. And I think the jury, the judge need to remember that this is not in the United States. Hard to win on foreign soil. And one thing I'd like to bring up is let's look at the points that have been accumulated on foreign soil. Let's add them up. Let's see how dominant the US has really been. Okay. What do you think that point difference is?
I think it's a lot less on the road than it is at home.
On foreign soil, 98.5 points has been accumulated for the U.S. side and 95.5 from the international side. So we're talking razor thin lines here. If we go back to just Royal Melbourne, how close they were. They came off, it's the best start the internationals have got off to. They've been down in their in that first session, 8 times. The only time was at Melbourne, in which they got off to a 4-1 start. Quail Hollow, that team was, from an official world golf ranking perspective, the worst international team that they've assembled. A lot of that had to do with LIV Golf. Guys that were way down the list ended up making that team. This year, you know, that team was 32 points on average behind the United States. This year, it's closer to 20, which is actually right around that 2019 number when we're talking about comparing the official world golf rankings between the two sides. Now, there are some overwhelming numbers when it comes to just the rankings of these two sides. But the one other thing I want to mention just from, you know, outside the international side is that the rookies on foreign soil, the United States rookies, I should say, are 45, 64, and 19. So these guys, they have 4 rookies on this team, only 2 for the international team. So there's a way in which now we're talking about international soil in which the U.S. is already, you know, they're not dominating on foreign soil. They are winning, but they're not dominating. And now you have 4 rookies that are new to the President's Cup. So that's kind of just some numbers I wanted to throw at you. But how is the international team going to do this? Well, we're going to need a lot. We're going to need a lot from our stars. Let's go to what we saw at the Ryder Cup. Like, why did it seem like the European side was so dominant? John Rahm, Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy, their stars showed up. They're going to need their stars to show up to give them points. And to me, their stars need to be Hideki Matsuyama, Corey Connors, and then some combination of either Jason Day or Adam Scott. Like, you have to have, of those 4 guys, you really need them all to have solid President's Cups. But then you're going to have to find something from cast of characters of who's going to be the guy to take that leap into, you know, potential President's Cup leading point getters. And there's the next group of guys that I think that if they have really nice weeks that they can build off of, maybe like a Tom Kim from the Quail Hollow, how well he played, he would be a guy. I think you have to have one guy between Mackenzie Hughes and Taylor Pendrith to have good weeks. You can't have Corey Connors and Taylor Pendrith go 0-4 like they did at the President's Cup. I think if those 2 guys, or just the Canadians in general, have good President's Cups, we're talking about now a Korean side who I feel as strong of any of the groups of where these guys are from, with Siwoo Kim being a ball striker that he is, Tom Kim, we've already mentioned, and then Sungjae Im, right? Like Sungjae is a guy that absolutely is a killer. And then Ben On as well, who's been a bit of a silent assassin this year. So the way I frame it, Your Honor, is that the United States, although they look strong on paper, their world ranking looks strong, I still feel like there's rookies on this team. There's plenty of star power in the international side. They do need it to show up. They need their stars to play well. They're going to need some guys to you know, the combination of making these picks like Mike Weir made with Mackenzie Hughes for his putting. He's got to putt good. Minwoo Lee with the driver, he's got to drive it good. Like, we can't have these guys' superpowers not show up. But if they do show up, I think there's an opportunity for this international team to win. And I rest my case.
Okay, perfect. So now I'm going to take off my powdered judge wig and I'm going to set it down. And I'm going to run around the bench. And now I'm a junior partner at the Kaufman & Kaufman law firm. Okay. And I'm going to ask the whoever the fill-in judge is if I can also use the rest of my time here. Because I agree with all that. And looking over the stats we've talked about in the front end, this is the most mind-blowing one. It's been talked about, you know, all week long, but just worth underscoring this point. In this competition, in the four-ball format, international teams actually scored more points than the United States teams, 72 to 70. In singles, it's not a huge margin. The United States has scored more points in singles, but it's only 90 to 78. When you go to foursomes, the United States has outscored the international team 89.5 to 52.5.
That's so 37 points. That's 37 points.
If I'm Mike Weir, I'm just playing alt shot every opportunity I can. Like, mix every possible combination of guys. And we're going on our scouting trip. We're only playing alt shot, you know, this week in the lead up. Like, I you know, we could figure it out. Everyone kind of knows how to play their own ball. They wouldn't be on the PGA Tour if they didn't know how to do that. We got to figure out how to succeed in foursomes. And if they can, then it's a completely different competition this week.
You know what's interesting is that when we talk about the Ryder Cup, and you just said a crazy stat, right? That's a 37-point advantage over the internationals. What do we talk about with the United States team at the Ryder Cup? We talk about how good they're in four ball and how much the Europeans are better than us at the foursomes. So what does that tell you about foursomes play?
Really interesting. Yeah.
It foursomes is the most uncomfortable, you know, way you can play golf. You just never feel like you can get in rhythm, and you will have to rely so much on the other guy. And there's a lot of trust in that. And the guys that typically play well, there seems to be a sense of freedom. And for whatever reason, Jim Furyk said this in his press conference, that the United States team in the President's Cup just tends to play more free in the President's Cup versus the Ryder Cup guys maybe are just a little bit more uptight. And I think you can kind of paint that same way towards the international team in which how they are just desperate to win one of these. But foursomes are very difficult.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, how one team can be so good against one opponent and so bad against another opponent. And I'm sure you could point to certain things, like, you know, especially in the age we live in with technology, where Scottie Scheffler was talking about his prep, and he said a lot of it's just trying out a bunch of different golf balls that I don't normally play, you know, and that's a real thing of just guys seeing a ball that comes out of a certain window with a certain spin profile. And, you know, they're all premium golf balls, of course, but they're just slight differences you got to get comfortable with. But that is really, it's interesting with the international team. It's like you have this huge pressure to do this thing that seems almost impossible to do at this rate. But the way to kind of do it is to just not think about all that and just completely relax and free up and go about it the way the Europeans do, because clearly they have so much success in that format. So it's going to be interesting. If they come out, you know, obviously they're going to play four ball first. So the home captain gets to choose which formats plays first. They've of course elected to play four ball because they're better in that.
That's a good call.
Mike Weir's first good call of the week. Let's play the format that we're not down, you know, almost 40 points in. That's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, right. And I mean, the international team got better after the Friday round. They played well on Saturday and Sunday at the last President's Cup at Quail. But it, I think it's so important for them to get off to a good start. Like Thursday and Friday, they need to just be in it. They need to win a session. They just don't need to get knocked out. You know, they don't need any 4-1ers. They don't need a 5-0er, because I think it's just going to be so hard to overcome that, that you can, right? Like singles gives you an opportunity with 12 points available to overcome just, you know, 4 or 5 point deficits. But you just don't want to have to set yourself up. Give yourself a, if you can just be within 2 points heading into singles, like you got all the chance in the world.
Yeah, the team leading after that first session has won this President's Cup 11 times. So you want to kind of get out there early and kind of, you know, get yourself a little bit of a buffer, especially if you're the international team heading into foursomes the following day.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, Smiley, because we're nearing the conclusion of this show. And of course, it's time to kind of put together some predictions. I have what I think is going to happen mapped out over the course of 4 days. How do you want to do this? Do you want to kind of sketch out what you think from score wise? Do you want me to start?
Well, I think it would be cool to maybe do let's do, you know, the highest point getter for each team. I think is a fun way to
like that,
to kind of like lead us into,
love that,
you know, who's going to be the surprise player that steps up and has a very good President's Cup that you wouldn't expect. So in that category outside the top guys. And I think from there we can kind of settle in on who's going to win the President's Cup, give a score, which I, what is like the point availability? So that I can get like the, because it's 14 and a half. Is that win it for you?
Go by sessions, right? So you can understand how many points are available for us, and then you can tally it up from there. So obviously there are 5 matches played in 4-ball on Thursday, and it is just a 4-ball session on Thursday, unlike the Ryder Cup where you have 2 sessions on Friday, two sessions on Saturday. And then, and it's probably worth going over that in full format. So people at home, many of you already know how this works, but just so you can understand, in the Ryder Cup on Friday and Saturday, there are both 4-ball and foursome sessions. And then on Sunday, it's obviously your 12 singles matches. For the President's Cup, it's of course a 4-day competition. So we just discussed how Thursday and Friday, the home captain gets to choose which of those two formats is played first. And instead of 4 matches, it's 5 matches. So this week, it's going to be on Thursday, the international team smartly electing to play 4-ball first. So there'll be 5 4-ball matches on Thursday, followed by 5 foursomes matches on Friday, otherwise known as alt shot. And then Saturday is where they cut both of those down into what feels more like a Ryder Cup format. 4 matches for each session. Morning will be 4-ball. Afternoon will be foursomes. And then, of course, your 12 singles matches on Sunday. So Smiley, it goes 5-5 and then 8 total on Saturday and 12 on Sunday. Not a math pod. Hashtag not a math pod.
Yeah, that didn't answer anything for me.
That didn't answer anything. I thought that was so well done. Well, I think
no,
I think
you set it up great. I just
30 total points available. There you go. Do we get there?
Okay. So you need 15 and a half. Is that right? Okay.
That's correct.
Why does 14 and a half come to my brain? And that's the Ryder Cup.
Right? Yeah.
You need 14 to win, but I think it's 14 and a half to get the cup back.
Right.
Ryder Cup.
If you're holding the cup, which is the same for this, I assume. If the U.S. wins 15 points this week, they retain.
Got it.
So there you go.
All right, guys. Do you want to go first?
So we're going to start with both teams, the leading point getter on those teams. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to start with the international team here. And I think Sung J.M. is going to be the lead point getter for that team. Just felt like he had a couple, you know, aberrations this year in majors, but he had just that incredibly solid stretch. He seems like a very kind of even keel guy that's just going to keep chugging. And not to say that, you know, a Canadian or even like a rookie like Minwoo Lee couldn't really feel the atmosphere and the energy and use that to propel themselves to, you know, winning 3, 4, you know, 5 matches. But I just feel like he's the guy that has the best chance of just keeping it nice and calm and steady and winning, picking off like, you know, 3 matches, maybe having another. That's who I think is going to be the lead point getter on the international side. On the American side, this is kind of like a tricky one because, you know, obviously your mind wants to go to Scottie Scheffler, but hasn't had the greatest record in team competitions the last two times out. You know, there are some, obviously I think the Gaul is going to have a huge President's Cup, but as a rookie, it's tough to kind of put your eggs in that basket out of the gate. So I'm going to go Colin Morikawa here. I mean, just another guy, phenomenal season, should have won the tour championship without starting strokes. A guy that I think is going to come in really hungry as if you're talking about Scottie Xander and Colin being your big three, so to speak. You know, those other two guys have three of the four majors that were won this year. So I think Colin's going to be a guy that's going to want to come in and prove a big point this week. So I think he's going to win the most points on the American side.
All right. I was probably going to take Colin Morikawa, so I'll just take somebody else differently.
Okay.
I love Colin for the reasons of just accuracy off the tee, eliminating the left side of the golf course. And I think the putter, too. I like him on these greens and just – you know, getting into the tighter sections. That's why I like Colin. But to go outside of somebody, you know, I mean, to me, I don't like Xander as much this week because over, you know, I think over the last couple months, if there was a miss that he had, it was left. You know, that seemed to be a miss that he had, but I still love him on these greens. I would prefer probably Scotty over him. But it's kind of boring, right? You don't want me to say Scotty, but I'm going to give you Scotty Scheffler. It's a leading point getter. And the international side, I want to give you Hideki Matsuyama. And the reason why I'm not is I think Hideki is going to be up to the biggest challenge. I think he's going to be playing the best that the United States puts out. I don't know how they do the – like if they just have put their five in order and then put it out. Or they
kind of go back and forth in that session that I believe happens on Wednesday, where they kind of draft it in I don't know if they do it snake
like they
order.
Put out their anyways. Yeah. I just assume
they do a draft, like it's like a, you know, it's a back and forth thing. Yeah,
yeah, I think they're gonna put Hideki against their best, and I think that makes it a little bit more challenging to win the points or to be the highest point getter because you're just it'd be really difficult to take down USA's best every single session. So it's like, who's the guy that's going to be maybe like drawing different, you know, drawing rookies, drawing different matchups every day. And my brain kind of takes me to I want to take Tom Kim just because I feel like this golf course really suits his game, hits it really straight, and gonna have plenty of opportunities. And I'm gonna go with Tom Kim for that reason. Although the form isn't necessarily like it doesn't say that on paper, but my gut feeling is that Tom Kim is gonna have a tremendous President's Cup, and I'm predicting him to score the most points for the international team.
I like it. I think that's a good choice. This guy that was surprisingly as a rookie who just spent a couple months on tour, really back at Quail Hollow in 2022, was one of the sort of the heartbeats of that team. So would not be shocked at all to see him playing well and scoring the most points for this side. So the next category you said is kind of like are we doing rookies or captain's picks or just like kind of newbies?
Sleeper. Yeah, like
sleeper just, pick.
Yeah, right. A guy that maybe he may not be playing in five sessions, right? But his, let's say he goes, you know, 2-0-1 or something, you know, like that would be considered a.
Or how about you lead us off here? Because I started the last one.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. So from the international side, I think a sleeper would be Taylor Pendrith.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like he had such a poor showing at the President's Cup at Quail Hollow. But man, he's got as good a form as anybody coming in here. He's just been under the radar. He's had a great second half of the season. I think this golf course being a Parkland style really suits his game. Just love Taylor Pendrith on this golf course and think he's going to get some opportunities early. It's all going to be about if he plays well and continues to earn the trust of Mike to keep sending him out and to play in all the matches. And if he gets five at bats, I just think there's going to be, you know, out of those three Canadians, there's going to be one that has a tremendous week. I want to give you Corey Connors on that, but I wouldn't consider him a sleeper. But give me Taylor Pendrith in that. And the U.S. side, I'm going to go with Russell Henley.
Mm.
I think Russell Henley, I love just how he goes about his game. He's a competitor, and I think he's going to be a great partner. Somebody that, although he's a rookie, I don't think he's going to look like one out there. He, to me, If he can just get the putter, you know, be consistent out there with it, make some putts. We just know, like, just looking at statistics every week, right? Russell's a very good iron player. Not the longest player in the world, but this golf course, I don't think you need to be. I think it'll pair up well. And I think Russell Henley's a good sleeper this week.
Yeah, I like both of those a lot. I will start back on the international side as well for my sleeper. And kind of continuing with the theme here, because we're talking about just even going back to the stats we discussed and why the Europeans play so well in the foursomes. They just play free, relaxed. They're less kind of impacted by the gravity of the moment, right? And so, you know, I think I agree with you that one of these Canadians is going to have a huge week. And given all we discussed about the putting contest nature that this event could be, Mackenzie Hughes is a guy that I think could be, you know, emerge with just making a ton of putts, really getting the crowd pumped up and you know, winning some points for the international side. But I'm going to use the sleeper pick here on Seabez. Like, I just think he had such a solid year through and through. I think he plays probably three sessions is just about right. And I just think very even keel. If he's a guy that starts rolling in putts, gaining some confidence, could just pick off a few points for the internationals and really be solid here and show up for them in a way that maybe Mike Weir intended when he made that pick and was looking at the skill set that Zayden not has. So that's on the international side. And then I'm going to kind of stick in a similar lane on the American side with Brian Harman. I think, like, he putted so beautifully in 2023 and winning that Open Championship, just made everything. And a guy that is, and he's obviously more of a, he's both a figurative dog and a literal Georgia Bulldog. So he's a guy that, you know, gets some emotion, gets going, he's a fiery match play competitor. But I also think too that just if you're needing some of those clutch putts and you're sitting on the fall line on 14 or 15 or whatever you're saying, and you're looking at a putt that's going to snap, he's a guy I really like to step up and meet that moment and make some of those big putts and get some points for the Americans. So yeah, those are my two guys in the sleeper category.
The only other guy I'm going to mention in this that we haven't really spoken about, who I think is a player that is, when you look at his stats and you're like, oh man, I don't think we give this guy enough credit, and it's Wyndham Clark. I think Wyndham. Yeah. I think Wyndham is set up to have a really nice President's Cup, and the reason why is because his birdie percentage on par threes and par fours is extremely high. I believe par threes he's seventh, par fours he's fourth. So like he's a guy that makes birdies on threes and fours with a golf course that's a par 70 and not a ton of trouble off the tee. You can kind of send it, and if he gets in a really good rhythm. He's a player that he was the best putter, I believe, outside of 35 feet this year. So just get him on the green. He can get a hot putter. Wyndham Clark could have a really good President's Cup.
I love that for a couple reasons. I think that Wyndham, for some of these team competitions, has been under a microscope a little bit of the way he ended up on the team. So the Ryder Cup, obviously, wins the U.S. Open. It, you know, qualifies for that team automatically, but is under a lot of pressure in his first team event to go to a hostile environment.
He was pretty straightforward, I should say, in his press conference.
Yeah.
And in the way he approached it, like came off a little on the cocky side and then just didn't really come out and play sharply right from the get go. So I think that there's just been stuff in the media that I think he's been misunderstood about sometimes.
100% is a guy that I think that, especially because we've had the chance, I mean, you more so than I, but even in the time we've been able to sit down with him and talk to him, you get the sense he's a very genuine human being and also is someone who is very open about all the mindset things he's gone through. And I think really is just telling you exactly how he feels and trying to be open and honest about it, which I appreciate a ton. But I think when you snip it and put it in a little block quote and shorten it to less than 140 characters, you know, rub some people the wrong way. But I think you got that whole thing. You had the whole thing with the Olympics and then a rough start there where he and then hard charged back and played well towards the end of the Olympics. But in this particular competition, we haven't really talked about him a ton in the lead up. I mean, obviously, you know, the roster's been analyzed top to bottom, but he's not one of the guys that's drawn as much focus as maybe like a Max Homa has, the way Max ended his year. So I could see him kind of flying under the radar a little bit, not feeling a ton of pressure, and just lighting it up this week and really validating, you know, his spot amongst the elite American players when it comes to the Ryder Cup and President's Cup. So love that one.
Well, let's get into some predictions. I'm going to let you give your prediction first. Do you want to be Benedict Arnold, or are you going to go USA all the way?
Well, I'm just going to walk you through how I think this thing's going to shake out, Smiley. And I want some intrigue. I think there will be some intrigue. So I think Thursday four ball, this is obviously plays more to the international strong suit. So five matches on Thursday. I think international wins the session by a score line of 3-2. I think it's going to be a lot of energy. You know, the crowd, that Montreal crowd, really pumping them up. I think those guys are going to be ready to go and really going to want to, you know, feel that home field advantage, so to speak, and go out there and get themselves out to an early lead. Then I think we move over to Friday, and the U.S., this is kind of their format, at least in this competition. I think we see the U.S. win the Friday foursome session 4-1. Which leaves us at a scoreline of 6-4 for Team USA heading into the double session on Saturday, right? So then Saturday morning four ball, four matches in play. I think we see a tie there, a little 2-2 tie. You know, obviously the international team still playing well, maybe not as well as they do in that opening session. So that leaves the USA up 8-6. But then I think we go to foursomes in the afternoon. We see the internationals take a little bit of pride, try to do well in a format they haven't done well in the past. And I think we tie that session as well. So a tie for the day, 4-4. And we're heading into Sunday singles at a score line of 10-8. Okay. 12 points, of course, on the line Sunday singles. I think it shakes out USA winning five of those. I think four of those are tied. I think the internationals win three of those. I think we see a final score line of USA 17-13. That's what I'm predicting for this President's Cup.
Okay, there you go. 17-13. I've thought about this long and hard, and I see a world in which the United States shows up, they play free, and they dominate, and they win this thing similar score in which they won this the last time, which was, I believe, 19.5-13.5 or something like that, or 12. I'm not a math guy.
Yeah.
Anyways, they won a lot by a lot.
None of those added up to 30, by the way.
Wait, you didn't subtract two?
There are people out there probably think it's a bit like we're just this bad at math. I wish we weren't, but we just are.
Okay. All right. So I think this is a buzzer beater. I've gone to, yes, the United States is going to go and just absolutely wear them out. I'm not there. I think this is going to be really close. And part of me thinks that the international team is going to win. I feel it in my gut. And I want to just make that prediction, but I think it's just, there's just too many guys like a Wyndham, like a Sahith, like a Sam Burns that I think step up, that it's just too much. And I think it ends up being very, very close. I think it comes down within, you know, the last couple matches. I'm going to go with 15.5-14.5 United States.
Wow. I love it. That's going to make for compelling television. I agree with you. Like, it's all of us want to find the world in which this thing gets interesting and the internationals pick off a home win. And all of a sudden we care more about the President's Cup again. But I think for me, where that whole thing breaks down is just looking at the Sunday singles lineup. And that's no disrespect to the guys on the international side. It's a huge compliment to all the firepower the Americans have throughout the entire lineup. And even the guys that aren't like obvious firepower guys like a Russell Henley, I think he's just going to be a phenomenal match play competitor and you know, do really well this week. So I think it's Mike Weir could dial up some magic in those first 3 days and keep it close. But I just think singles is where it's just going to be tough for them.
Jim Furyk didn't have the best go at it the last time he was the captain for the Ryder Cup. But I think I think he's learned a little bit from that experience. And I actually think he's going to be able to motivate these guys, because it'd be easy for me to think that these guys are just going to kind of show up and expect to win. I don't think Jim Furyk's really wired that way. I think he's going to really, you know, try to get these guys intense and ready to go right from the get-go. I don't think it's going to be easy. I think it's going to be a battle. This golf course doesn't lend itself to be able to just cruise around it. You got to be able to go out on that front nine, make some putts, and then on the back nine, play some strategic, you know, aggressive golf that's at really tight targets. So you're going to have to go up and play some good golf. And it's not easy to win on the road, as I've laid out here before. And I think the USA just narrowly gets it done.
Well, there you go. So it's Smiley's on the record for 15.5 to 14.5. I have 17 to 13. Both of us have the Americans winning the President's Cup yet again. So we'll have to wait until that's actually something I should know. Do you know where are we next hosting the President's Cup? Is it back Quail Hollow again?
The next President's Cup is no, it's not at Quail Hollow. It's going to be in the U.S. Where would it be?
We're looking it up right now. Medina.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, that's going to be sick. That's going to be very sick.
And then it's in Royal Melbourne in 28.
Which is also very, very sick. Yeah. Look at that. So that's what we got for you. Smiley, I'm going to let you wrap things up. Go get some poutine. Have you ever had poutine before?
Huh?
Have you ever had poutine before?
No.
Oh.
Buddy. I'm about to just Uber eat something. It's already 7:40. It's been a long day. Got up at 4:40. So yeah, it's been
You know those cheese curds we had at Culver's?
Yeah.
So it's like fries with those cheese curds in there covered in gravy.
Oh gosh. That would wear me out. I'll
put you
man.
Right to sleep.
I'm going to try to eat good this week. We'll see how well that goes. Yeah, I'm excited for this President's Cup.
Love it.
Just getting on site, seeing the build out. The first tee, they had the DJ out late this evening playing some music. So it got me excited. The only thing I'll leave you with is it's only happened one time. The United States has lost two team events in a row. And potentially, is it going to happen again? I think that's the storyline to watch for the internationals. You know, with it being an extra day, you can kind of build these storylines every day if the international team is leading throughout. Which, listen, I wouldn't be surprised if the international team took a lead two singles and that they, you know, had a lead throughout the entire deal. But I still feel like the U.S. is going to end up just narrowly winning this thing.
Well, a huge thanks to Ahead and Recovery Pin for kindly presenting our coverage this week of the President's Cup. We're going to be back here as we always are for majors or big events with daily journals. So look for that in your feeds late Thursday night. And then of course, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But that's all for us tonight. We appreciate you watching and listening and hope you enjoy the start of the 2024 President's Cup. We'll talk to you soon.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the